Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And it's another very busy show. We'll reflect on the very sad news that one of England's, if not the greatest ever spinner, Derek Underwood, has passed away at the age of 78. And we'll hear from David Bumble Lloyd. Worcestershire CEO Ashley Giles will join us to give an update on the county and how they've dealt with 8 full floodings this winter. Nottinghamshire batter Joe Clark joins us to discuss a promising start to his season with back-to-back centuries. And Wisden Almanac editor Lawrence Booth will join us to discuss their top 5 cricketers for the 2024 edition. And we'll round up the week's other big stories as more England players shine in the IPL. And always, we'll bring you the final word. So plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to Following On. Well, the man that was known as Deadly, Derek Underwood, has passed away at the age of 78. An extraordinary performer over 25 years for Kent, 900 matches, 297 test wickets for England, and over 2,500 first-class wickets. An extraordinary career, in many ways a pioneer as well, Harmy. I mean, not a conventional left-arm spinner by any means. He bowled much quicker than even any spinners of today's age. But my goodness me, a little uncovered pitches. Oh, jeepers. You know, he didn't need much help from the pitch, but if there was any around, he really was deadly.
Yeah, he was. He was well nicknamed. And it's sad, very sad, you know, to lose another great of our game. And he was a great, you know, England's leading wicket taker from a spin bowler's point of view on them uncovered pitches. I spent my informative years of cricket career with, you know, the great man, and I've spoke about him a lot on this show in such high regard, Norman Gifford. Norman Gifford, a spin bowler himself, you know, who bowled it that little bit quicker, got over 2,000 first-class wickets. And, you know, whenever Giff spoke about times gone by, and he spoke so fondly about how good Derek Underwood was, and you see some of the footage, you know, of the Ashes when, you know, sawdust everywhere, men round the bat, and Derek Underwood, he was more of a, you know, a little medium pacer, that just little bowl, little cutters than your conventional slow bowler. But, you know, if there was anything in the surface, he was virtually unplayable. And it is a sad loss to cricket, sad loss to Kent. He was a wonderful man. Met him on a couple of occasions, once at Lord's during a test match. He was a really gentle, softly spoken man who obviously had a huge love for the game, because the longevity of his career was just, it was mind-boggling. 25 years in the game, over 2,500 wickets. It is a sad day for English cricket.
I always found it ironic that he was nicknamed Deadly, because really, as you say, off the field, I mean, you know, he would take sort of 6 for 50 and you'd feel like you'd been savaged by a sheep. He was the gentlest, kindest, most wonderfully considerate man, and yet he was deadly on the cricket field. So anyway, let's hear from a man who did know him a lot better than both of us. Former England coach, legendary commentator for TalkSport as well, David Bumble Lloyd, who joined Paul Hawksby and Perry Groves over on TalkSport to pay his tribute to Derek Underwood.
I saw him from time to time during cricket seasons, and you know, I played with him, as you mentioned, obviously played against him. He was just a superb bloke, very down to earth. As a batsman, he was quite funny. But his main forte, of course, was as a spin bowler, a devastating spin bowler. But he had these sort of 10 to 2 feet, and he'd come out as a night watchman and get peppered by fast bowlers. And he was frightened to death. But somehow, from time to time, he survived. A wonderful fella, absolute gent of a bloke. And he loved a pint. He just loved a pint at the end of play. And he was quite posh as well. And, you know, we all have, in the game, we'd have great memories of him.
Fumble, I can remember, I grew up like around Essex in the days of Ray East and David Ackfield, obviously like the Essex spin twins. And with Derek Underwood, I obviously just saw him on TV. And he was a bit of a trailblazer. You know, like what I related to is when Boris Becker, you first saw him at Wimbledon, and he was diving volleys. You know, no one had ever seen that before. With Derek Underwood, the spin bowling was more spin sort of medium pace, where on wet tracks, he could skid it through, and then when it dried out a bit, then he could turn it.
Yeah, he was a cutter. He didn't have, you know, when spin bowlers will put purchase on their index finger, not him. He held it so differently, and everybody, when he first started, he wanted to be a medium pacer. And he quickly changed into this style of spin bowling. And you mention his nickname, Deadly. He was exactly that on a pitch, uncovered pitches as they had. He would bowl a team out in an hour. He'd be absolutely unplayable. You know, I remember a game we played, I think it was at Blackpool, and it was a green tinge pitch with a bit of dampness in it. And the seamers had done the bit. And it might have been Mike Dines who threw him the ball. Come on, Deadly, have a ball. Nothing untoward. We didn't think this is going to be unplayable. He got 7 for 6. Wow, he just bowled us out. And unplayable. Because he wasn't a spinner. He was a cutter. And he bowled it much quicker than spin bowlers do.
Yeah, no, he did. They were quite flat when they quickened flat the way, but they weren't loopy at all, were they?
And it was only off of like 4 or 5 paces as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He used to run in. You see spinners now who would be quite methodical and just walk in. He ran in and bowled at this pace, and of course his mate were behind the stumps. Alan Knott was behind the stumps. And they had, you know, they had telepathic between the pair of them. They knew what was coming, not knew what was coming. And they had little signals as to what delivery it would be. But you can't stress, he was much quicker, much, much quicker than your normal spin bowler.
It's legendary England commentator David Bumble Lloyd paying tribute to Derek Underwood after his passing at the age of 78. It was an absolutely fascinating and intriguing round of championship matches once again. And following on County Cricketer, you'll be on that on Thursday, Harmy. So you'll go into a great deal more depth on all the stories. And as always, there are loads and loads of fascinating ones. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And a reminder, you can now watch us on YouTube as well if you're not doing so already. Just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. Now then, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined by Joe Clark, who's begun the season with a real bang for Nottinghamshire, back-to-back hundreds. Joe, congratulations. A lot of people are talking about the Kookaburra ball and the very, very high scores, which I think is a backhander to the slap of the face, isn't it? you've still got to score the runs, and you've been scoring them very, very well indeed.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, there's obviously been a lot of big scores across the games this round and the first round. But yeah, I mean, obviously, the first game here at Trent Bridge had a result. And if the rain hadn't have intervened today, I'm sure there might have been another one. So the two that we've been involved with have produced good games cricket.
Yeah, and how's that start? You've getting a, you know, you've got a defeat and a draw first up. Transition side, you've got a couple of new faces. How's everything started with Notts? Perfect for you. I know you've been keeping wicket. You've getting a back-to-back hundreds, but how things started with Notts in them first two games?
Yeah, I think it's probably a realisation again of Division One cricket. We've been, especially the first game with Essex, we at one stage sort of had them 120 for five, and then that sort of killer instinct, I guess, of staying on them then, and we just let them slip to get to a sort of 300 lead, and then, you know, got done by some brilliant bowling by Cook and Porter, which obviously they can do. And the same again here, really, when sort of had a 120 for one last night, and I think everything's going well, and then all of a sudden you find yourselves losing seven wickets in a session and the game sort of balancing out. So, yeah, obviously there's some new faces, some young lads with loads of potential. And yeah, I guess we sort of would have liked to have started a little bit better, but got some points on the board this week, and we move on to Somerset on Friday.
Joe, I'm going to circle back to Ben Duckett and his development and your own England ambitions. But before I forget, I want to ask you about your winter, because you've been really very busy, and people sort of concerned about players playing 12 months of the year and burnout and that kind of thing. But you appear to be, well, judging by your scores, fresh as the daisy.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but I think it's a difficult one, really. I think, obviously, I think everyone knows the gains you can have from spending time in the winter months playing franchise cricket, and it's helped my white ball game loads. And for the sort of last 4 years, that's been my winters. The last 2 years, I've decided not to do as many competitions, and for that reason being that getting back in the middle of March and then going into the county season, I found difficult, and I felt like it hampered my red ball game and my red ball batting, and I didn't want to lose that. You know, I still have ambitions to play Test cricket. I still feel like that's the pinnacle. So yeah, for the last 2 years, I've got back in sort of early Feb and spent some time in the indoor school, and then got out to Abu Dhabi this winter for pre-season. I felt like that's helped my Red Bull going massively.
Last year you had Stuart Broad. This year you've got Ben Duckett coming back from England duty. It's always nice in the dressing room when an England player comes in and raises the standards. How's that been for Ben, for the rest of you lads, and for the aspirations of the younger lads wanting to play for England? Seeing somebody across the room in the dressing room who had a very good winter with England, does that drive you on to aspire to want to sort of, you know, get close to Ben in an international as well?
Definitely. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of the lads who've played with Ben since, well, I joined at the same time Ben did Notts. So, you know, obviously he had a taste of it before he joined Notts. But, you know, a lot of the lads here saw his development through his years with Notts and the hunger he had to get back involved with England and how quickly it happened for him. And I think that's sort of shown a few of the lads in the dressing room that a good few months of the summer and some consistent performances, then, you know, you're never too far away of putting your name in the hat again. So, yeah, brilliant to see Ben obviously representing England again. And he's obviously started fantastically and obviously had an amazing winter. So, yeah, it's always a privilege to have lads at the club representing England.
Joe, a lot of talk about the scheduling and the arrangement of the summer with the championship, so many games being played so early in the summer. You have any particular thoughts on that? And how many sweaters have you been wearing?
I mean, the schedule's one of them. I think it gets talked about in the dressing room. For me, I feel like you want to have the best players on the park as much as you can. And, you know, playing seven championship games in 8 weeks, you know, are you going to get the best bowlers bowling the quickest they can bowl in those seven games with sort of limited rest? So I guess that's one thing I'd put out there. But yeah, I guess, and also it's the only thing about starting this earlier potentially is the weather, and that's affected a lot of the games around the country at the moment.
And Joe, you're sort of batting, you know, for people that are listening at home, you'll know the name and seen the scores and stuff like that. But, you know, do you feel as though you've said you want to play at a higher level and play for England? This baseball team plays in a certain way. You know, you play a lot of franchise cricket. Do you feel as though this is probably the peak of your time to potentially knock on that England door, especially the way England play, and it suits a style that you obviously that comes natural to you?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, to be fair, because although I haven't played on a in test match cricket. And but obviously speaking to the lads who have, say, you know, the wickets are a lot better than they are in county cricket. So that aggressive style of play may be slightly easier, but I fell into it last year of trying to play more aggressively in the longer format, and with the ball moving around in sort of April and May, I found it tough to actually play that way. So I kind of went back to what I'd been doing for 3 years before that and just trying to play a normal game of, you know, actually give myself a chance and getting myself in. But I think it's exciting. I think, yeah, obviously T20 cricket, obviously open the batting and try and play that explosive game. So I feel like I could do that, but I'd also found it quite difficult doing it in county cricket. I think it's a bit more difficult.
And finally, Joe, a lot of talk about the obvious title contenders. Surrey, big favourites, I think, in many people's eyes to defend their title. And Essex, I think, are on many people's lips. Hampshire. Do you feel like Nottinghamshire are flying under the radar this season? Maybe just happy to stay up comfortably? Or do you think you can mount a blindside challenge?
I think it's early doors. Obviously, we'd have liked to have had a better start. You know, we've got Will Young, the New Zealand batter, coming in now. And we missed Dane Patterson this week with a slight little niggle. So full strength, I think we have the capabilities of beating any side. But obviously, we know that the Division One this year is very strong. You know, we've seen this week with Worcester. I feel like they can compete with any team. Durham, with the signings that they've made and the strength they have there, they're definitely there to compete as well. So definitely feels like a strong division. And yeah, I guess we'll see if anyone can knock Surrey off the top.
Many thanks for your time, Joe. Hopefully it warms up and you can take some of those sweaters off.
Thank you.
That was Nottinghamshire batter Joe Clark reflecting on a really promising start to the season, back-to-back hundreds. And just before we hear from Sir Andrew Strauss, Harmy, do you think that there's more to Joe Clark's decision or request to keep wicket than the job needed doing at Notts? Do you think that might be a way into the England team?
I really hope so, because I like that about players, characters, that the challenge themselves. Have always said that if anybody wants to bat in the top sort of three or four for England, have to bat in the top, you know, top three for their county, really put themselves under pressure. And there's a spot up for grabs, and possibly Joe's saying that he's worked out from the last previous two winters to come back in February, got himself ready to play red ball cricket. And I just wonder, watching in the winter, is there a spot up for grabs in the England cricket team as batter wicketkeeper? And he's gone and getting back to back hundreds while keep wicket for Notts. I hope so, because that for me tells me that there's a character there thinking about how can I get in the England team, not just trying to stay relevant as a county cricketer. So needs most possibly, but yeah, good on him if he has done that, because back-to-back hundreds, I'm sure Rob Key and many more others will be watching him, because he is a very, very talented young man.
Yeah, and he played for the Lions, of course, when he was just 21. So he's still young. He's still got time on his side. That was Joe Clark. Now, let's hear from former England captain Sir Andrew Strauss, who was speaking a little earlier this week with TalkSport's Scott Taylor, who's also our producer, ahead of the inaugural Alfred Dunhill Paddle Classic at the Hurlingham Club on the 15th and 16th of May.
I mean, I don't know why this is even a conversation point. Yeah. I don't know why so many people have a sort of animosity to the 100. I mean, the 100 has the opportunity to underpin the whole of the rest of the game in this country. And as you say, also a huge opportunity to engage a whole new audience in cricket. So that's what it was designed to do. That's what it's doing. And I think the right sort of private investment can really accelerate that as well. And, by the way, pay for a lot of counties that are really struggling financially. So this shouldn't be a conversation point. It's just how we do it most effectively and how we focus on growing the 100 to be the... I feel it can easily be the second best short-form tournament in the world behind the IPL. That, for me, should be the focus right now.
And how much sort of sympathy do you have, having been in the role of having to fit four formats in a five-month block in the summer? And I guess, how much relieved are you not to be worrying about that anymore and focus on something else?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem easy to get any sort of consensus on how best to do it. But if you take it as given that there's going to be a block in the summer for the 100, and for all the reasons that I've articulated previously, I still think there are things we can do in terms of the amount of red ball cricket we play and when we play our red ball cricket, that we can improve the schedule and make it easier for players. But, you know, ultimately they're going to be asked to play a lot of cricket, as they are all year round. And by the way, you know, if we don't do it in this country, they'll be doing it somewhere else in another country as well. So always challenges. And that schedule being the sort of the biggest Rubik's Cube of all time, and one that I'm very keen not to be engaged with right at the moment. I've tried my best on that one, and someone else's turn.
That was former England captain Sir Andrew Strauss speaking with TalkSport's Scott Taylor ahead of the inaugural Alfred Dunhill Paddle Classic. Well then, Harmy, who'd have thought? Private investment in the 100. Is this not something that we predicted, talked about 2 years ago?
Yeah, we said that 2 years ago, that it was coming and needed. And all we need now, Manners, is it to turn into a 2020 over competition, and our crystal balls would have been absolutely spot on and perfect. Who'd have thought that anybody would listen to us? But no, it's inevitable, but it's right. It's going in the right direction. Yes, we've bagged it on this show, but I think the product is getting better. So let's see where it goes. Sir Andrew Strauss speaks brilliantly. I thought it was a great interview. He's a good man. His heart's in the right place. He wants England to do well. His high-performance review he did, that everybody in county cricket's having a go at, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, every single thing that he put forward will be in place, guaranteed. It was possibly done at the wrong time, but I know for a fact it was done from a good heart. I know for a fact it was done to make English cricket better. And what the next stage of English cricket being better? Somebody coming in with a huge pot of money to develop the 100 into a competition that we can shout from the rooftops. And I think it's coming very, very soon. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I can just see it. In a few years' time, somebody's going to take the Strauss report out of the ECB filing cabinet, dust it off and go, gee, there's some good ideas in here.
Absolutely, but somebody else will try and take credit for it.
Yep, of course. And a reminder, for a full roundup of the week's County Championship action, you can listen to Following On County Cricketer every Thursday, available on the Following On podcast feed. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll be joined by former England spinner and current Worcestershire chief executive, Ashley Giles.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you have missed any of the show and you want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed, available as always via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, I'm delighted to say that we're joined by Worcestershire Chief Executive Ashley Giles, former England spinner, of course, with a lot on his plate, mostly to do with the weather. We'll come on to the flooding at New Road and contingency plans, Ash, but must start with the sad news, the passing of deadly Derek Underwood, still England's leading test match spin bowler, 86 test matches, and just a great, great exponent of the art, which you assumed the mantle of for a long period for England. So a very, very sad day. I mean, I know he was a different generation to you, but were you aware of him? Did you look up to him in your early days?
Absolutely aware of him. I think it's a great loss to the game. I remember sitting with Bob Woolmer quite a lot when he was coach with Warwickshire. He used to talk very fondly of Derek Underwood. And actually, I mean, he was a very different spinner in any generation, wasn't he? I mean, Bob used to talk about that he almost ran in and bowled really fast cutters and was a great exponent on those slightly damp pitches that uncovered wickets that maybe were back in the day. But brilliant performer, both in first class and test cricket.
He was very, very different. He bowled, like you said, he bowled medium pace at times, didn't he? But it was his ability to make the best use of conditions. And he was a phenomenon right from the start. Made his debut for Kent at the age of 17, took 4 for 40 against Yorkshire. And you have to admire his longevity, don't you? Over 900 games for Kent, played for them for over a quarter of a century.
Yeah, could only dream of that sort of longevity, Manners. yeah, I remember he actually presented me with my South of England Bunbury cap, I think back in the mid-80s somewhere at one of the Esker festivals. That was the first time I met him. I'm not sure how many times since, but yeah, I think it also shows how old we're all getting. Years are passing too quickly.
And Ash, onto Worcester, you've gone into their new job, and this winter's been slightly challenging, shall we say.
Yeah, I've been in the job just over 9 months now. It has been really challenging. It's almost, and I shouldn't tempt fate, you know, cricket's almost been the easiest part of it. We're in the process of a change of chair as well, going through finding a new chair for the board. But the flooding's been the big issue, and that's been the well-documented issue. We've flooded now eight full floods of the ground, which is unprecedented. We're having to move our first two home games away, championship games, Durham and Somerset, to Kidderminster. And all of that, as well as the cost of cleaning up, does come at a huge price, you know, and for a club our size, a difference of, you know, a couple of £100,000, a lot of money to anyone, but to us, it makes a big difference.
Ash, every club has members who've been attending for, you know, 40, 50 years. What do you say to those who say, well, Ashley, it's always been like that. You know, we just roll our sleeves up and get on with it. Is it actually, I heard you mentioning climate change in another interview some time ago. Is that a reality?
What, me mentioning climate change? That is balance, isn't it? I've heard members say that as well. I can understand why they would say it, because like anything, there's almost a slow creep of change and it goes less noticed. But the stats actually don't lie. You've probably heard these before as well. But since 1899, of the 30 highest floods recorded here, 19 of them have been in the last 24 years. So it's definitely getting worse. We actually, just this morning, we're speaking to a guy from the Environment Agency. That picture's not getting any better. Whatever they try and do to mitigate the issue, it's not getting any better. So, you know, as I've said to the members, for me, you know, I have to look at everything. And my main role is the sustainability of Worcestershire as a club. So on and off the field. And so, you know, I'd be silly, given the amount of flooding and the amount of cost that goes with that, not to look at all options. And one of those options has to be a move away from New Road.
You mentioned Kidderminster as a standby venue for the championship games. What about the Blast? I mean, presumably you won't derive nearly as much income if you can't play your Blast games at New Road.
Yeah, so at the moment we're planning to get back to New Road on the 24th of May for a championship game that starts on that day, and our first T20 matches against Lancashire here on the 31st of the month. So that is absolutely crucial. With the most recent flood, that looked very much in the balance. We are still hopeful. The sun's out now. You might better just see behind me. But as you say, Manners, the costs go through the roof. They just spiral out of control once you start bringing T20 cricket into it, particularly, obviously, your home games and the revenues you'd lose from that. So I have to consider it, but it's something you really don't want to think about.
You say you've been in the job for 9 months. How is me old mate getting on? Have you come to any conclusions at this last sort of 3 or 4 weeks when it has literally, the water has been caving in? Have you thought about, oh, have I bitten off more than I can chew here? I've been watching from afar and thinking, oh, come on, Hash. You know, is it not easier in a tracksuit?
Yeah, I mean, it is a really big challenge. It's a great challenge for me. My first CEO gig. You know, I've had pretty much every role in cricket and enjoyed each of them in a very different way. But this is my first CEO job. It is challenging, but I have a really good team around me. It's a great club with a great history. We're a relatively lean organisation. We don't have that many staff. That's what shocked me when I first came into the office, and I was sort of, you know, is this it? Is this the whole team? You know, full-time staff away from the players and coaches, we're only about 40. So, you know, it's not big, but that means you get to see everyone, you know everyone, and you have to pull together, particularly at times like this. And we're very lucky that we do have people who do pull us through these situations.
And do you find it easy to wear the one hat? Well, I suppose as chief executive, you're actually wearing about 6 hats. But on the playing side of things, do you leave it to the excellent Alan Richardson pretty much to get on with the playing side of things? Or do you still don the tracksuit from time to time?
No tracksuit. I actually have at least 2 hats because I'm picking up the director of cricket duties as well. So Richo is head coach. So that particularly with what's been going on the last few weeks is challenging. I'm lucky that, as you said, Richo's been excellent. I think what we're finding is, well, we work very well together, but I sort of come down from that chief exec position and Richo moves up a bit. So we meet somewhere in the middle on the responsibilities. But I think we've worked really well on things like recruitment over the winter. You know, we had a lot of players leave last year. We've recruited some really good guys and some really good overseas players. So very happy with how that's working out.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, players had obviously moved on to pastures new in the winter. You brought in Nathan Smith, Jason Holder. But just talk to us a little bit about Kashif Ali, who back-to-back hundreds. What a great story that is.
Yeah, amazing story. I can't claim credit for that one. He was in before me, but our first graduate from the South Asian Cricket Academy, he's a great credit to them. And again, going back to Richo, very bold move, really, putting him in at 3 in the county championship. But, yeah, what a start for the lad. I mean, he's got incredible potential. Last year in the white ball games, he played a couple of innings that were just sparkling. So, yeah, we're very proud and lucky to have him. We've since signed a fast bowler from SACA as well called Yadvinder Singh. And, we think that's a really important resource that we can tap into, as well as obviously giving guys from a South Asian background the opportunity to play, you know, high level of cricket.
Ash, I know that you've got a master's degree, I think, in sports management or business science. But I the people I've spoken to at Worcester, and I've still got some friends there, have said that the most important thing is that you're obviously qualified for the job, but it's you're a cricket man. You've got a feel, a sense, and I wouldn't ask you whether there's an issue with cricket administrators not having a sense and a feel and a love and a passion for the game. But do you get the feeling from the members in the club that the fact that you are who you are makes a big difference to them?
Look, possibly. I think it certainly helps you get a foot in the door. But I hope I'm also, as well as being a cricket man, I'm a people man. I think the most important part of any organisation and business is the people, and whether that be our staff or members. Most of the time, I think I'm pretty approachable. And again, I think people sit at the very core of everything you do, and you've got to look after them first. And I think that's, you know, that's the leadership piece, which I haven't always got right. Absolutely. I don't think everyone does. But, you know, I think that's the biggest thing I've learned over the last, 17 years in management is you've got to take care of your people and got to get the right people on the bus first before you do anything else.
And put your cricket hat back on. Ash, you've seen in the winter, young Bashir come into the England team, Tom Hartley, left arm spin. They've only played one game in each of the, Bashir missed the first game, Hartley's missed this round of county championships. How hard is it to manage this time of the year, getting young spinners in? You know, that's the art that you know so well. Managing these guys, where do you see the future of them who did, you know, very, very well in India?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult. I mean, I reflect back really fondly on the early part of my career in learning my way at Edgbaston, bowling a lot of overs at the other end to someone like Neil Smith, who was my spin twin at Edgbaston, through the middle of the summer. Now, you know, I still think we have a bit of a schedule problem in terms of when we play and how we play Red Bull cricket. And I know there's been a lot spoken about this first couple of weeks of the county championship season around the ball and how the Kookaburra plays. But actually, if you look at some of these matches, if you take some of the weather out, we've had some really good long games of cricket that have brought spin into the game. Josh Baker at Trent Bridge for us has bowled a lot of overs this week, as have the two not spinners. So I know there'll be moans and groans, but I like some of the intent around this change, because if it can't happen naturally, sometimes you've got to force it to get it into the game. And at the moment, you know, the schedule, I've said this before, but we probably need to invent more months rather than anything else, because we just don't have enough time to play everything with the, you know, balancing those demands. And we all get it. You've got to balance the commercial demands with the developing players' demands and making sure we've got a test side that competes in the future.
Ash, on the subject of Tom Hartley and Shoaib Bashir, and also Rehan Ahmed for that matter, how do you think you would have been being captained in a test match by Ben Stokes and his...
It's a bit different than Nasser Hussain.
Yeah. Look, I think I really enjoyed it. I have to say to start... before Nas gets offended by Army's comment.
I'm always doing it. So yeah. I think he's getting offended by me.
I enjoyed the majority of my captains. You know, I had some really good captains at Edgbaston, like Dermot Reeve and Tim Munton. But then with England, Nasser and Vaughan, obviously, very different leaders, but both offered me a hell of a lot. But I think Stokesy... You know, I think one of the key bits is how he's managed his people and build that confidence first and try and remove that fear of failure that we know can be so damaging to teams. So it certainly looks like he's trying to get them to thrive. And one of the other things I think is so important for young spinners is to sort of step forward and take control. So set your fields, be confident about what you want to do. And I think Ben would allow his spinners to do that. I don't think he'd dominate them. He'd want to hear the right answers and he'd want to have a proper conversation about the whys, but I think he'd give a spinner enough chance to grow and enough time to grow.
Okay, without confusing me and Homi with too much finance, we have been quite big on the growing divide between the haves and the have-nots, and obviously the 100 is a part of that. And there are, you know, eight counties are currently hosts, and there's talk of that being increased to 10. And also, it now is inevitable that private investment will become a massive, massive factor in the 100. IPL teams will buy in and perhaps even teams from America. It's quite difficult for the likes of me and Harmy to keep track, but I guess that's your job. So you've probably got your finger closer to the pulse than we have.
Yeah, so firstly, on the divide, the divide is definitely getting bigger. And I don't think you can... necessarily, or you're going to stop that. If you just look at the scale of businesses alone, you know, a Surrey or a Warwickshire or a Lancashire compared to us in terms of turnover, well, it's just incomparable. So that is happening. It's happened. So what's the most important thing going forward? For me, it's making sure there is a place for the 18 and that the 18 is sustainable. I think currently there's a danger that the 18 aren't sustainable with some of the finances in the game. And whatever you think of the 100, not you, but whatever people think of the 100, it probably offers us the best opportunity in this next period to bring in the investment we need for the whole game. And that is twofold. So half of it, well, not half of the money, but, you know, half of the issue is making sure that counties are sustainable and the game is strong and that we've got those 18 satellites around the country that play cricket. But also the other half of it is making sure the 100 can compete with the very best of the franchise competitions around the world. That means paying the players more, probably, in short terms, which at the moment it doesn't. And we're seeing that change, that switch. We all love Test cricket. You know, us three particularly are probably real traditionalists. We love Test cricket, but we're seeing that move between or from sort of bilateral cricket, England v Australia, to franchise cricket. And again, that's coming, that change. So we either need to join the party or accept that it's going to pass us by. But fundamentally, Manners, I think it's about, again, going back to what I said at the beginning, it's about protecting the whole game. And that includes Red Bull cricket and Test cricket. And I think the extra investment into the game or any outside investment that does come will help us do that.
And finally, Ash, what's the going forward? The sun coming out, the water going away, and the blast being able to play at New Road, is that what gets you up every morning and hope and wish that you can get that great club back on track and people back in at New Road?
Yeah, it's a really good challenge for me. The priority absolutely is getting cricket back here. The longer term stuff we absolutely need to think about and work with all the stakeholders, including the members, local council, county council, ECB. But yeah, I think it's been particularly hard because we've had no cricket here yet. We've not looked like playing cricket here yet, and we're not playing here until the end of May. So yeah, I really look forward to getting back, getting cricket back on at New Road and being able to worry about those sort of things rather than some of the other stuff on my intro at the moment.
And that was the final one from Harvey. And a final one from me, Ash, is what memories, one with bat, one with ball, although it doesn't matter, from your playing career? You know, Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum have spoken about making memories and creating history that will, you know, sustain you and put a smile on your face for the rest of your life. I suspect that you might mention 2005 here, but what are the moments individually with bat and ball, bowling Tendulkar around his legs, anything at all that you like to what puts a smile on your face when you're sweating over the spreadsheets and worrying about New Road?
Well, I think there's probably three. One's less of a moment, but you touched on it, the team bit around 2005, you know, seeing Harmy here, whenever we see each other, all us guys, I think there's always something special that bonds that group of people. And it was that year, which was such a special year for cricket. And that's, you know, I love playing and working in teams for that reason. The two moments, individual moments, I suppose, Brian Lara at Lords bowled through the gate from 100th Test wicket. That was a pretty good one. And again, going back to 2005, probably with a bat, not Trent Bridge, as a lot of people expect, but actually batting with Kev on that last day at the Oval, being out there 3 hours with him, with probably the best seat in the house for one of the best Test innings of all time. And then walking off and seeing this lot at the top of the stairs and sharing that special moment and a few beers, but really good times.
Brilliant times.
Ashley Giles, thank you very, very much indeed for your time. Very best of luck. Get the wellies on and hopefully we'll have some sunshine and some cricket at New Road. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for your time. I know you don't have a lot of it.
Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it.
It's the brilliant Worcestershire CEO and former England spinner Ashley Giles. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Durham Hall of Famer Steve Harmison. Well, what a treat for the third year in a row to have Wisden Almanac editor Lawrence Booth join us to talk about the five cricketers of the year. Routinely misunderstood, I have to say, by many cricket lovers, in England in particular, who don't understand the criteria. But you can cover that as you go through the five cricketers of the year. Harry Brook, Mark Wood, Ashley Gardner, Usman Khawaja and Mitchell Starc. Quite a lineup, so talk us through it, if you could.
Yeah, two Englishmen, three Australians. The criteria you mentioned there routinely confuses everyone. It almost confuses me now. I've had to explain it so many times. But the emphasis is on the previous English summer. And you can't be chosen more than once. I think those are the rules. So the five we ended up with were, it's not always the five who were the best five in the previous summer. We think that's quite boring. You know, that's what the ICC does. That's what all sorts of other awards do. We do the best five of those who are eligible. And they always have a good story to tell. It's a great Hall of Fame to be part of. Yeah, I mean, you know, Harry Brook, let's start with him. You know, he passed 50 more times than anyone in the Ashes last summer. It was his first Ashes series. And he played match-winning hands at Headingley, where England won by 3 wickets. He played the crucial hand there on his home ground. And then at the Oval, I think in the Ashes, he got a 30, a 40, a 50, a 60, a 70 and an 80. So he was 100, 90 and 100 was all that was missing, really. And then, of course, he scored a 41-ball 100 for the Northern Superchargers in the 100. That was a tournament record. And he batted his way into England's World Cup squad. So he had a great summer. All that was missing, really, was an Ashes 100. Ashley Gardner, Australian off-spinner, took 12 wickets in the one-off women's test in the Ashes. And that was really the performance that secured for Australia's women the retention of the Ashes. England fought back and tied the series on points. But without Gardner's 12 wickets, which are the second best figures in the history of women's test cricket, Australia probably weren't retaining those Ashes. She was a central figure. Back to the men's Ashes, Usman Khawaja. I mean, he was... I think without him, Australia's men wouldn't have retained the Ashes. You know, that double at Edgbaston where he got, 141 and 65. And without either of those two innings, England would probably have won that game and would probably, on the balance of what happened later in the series, would probably have won the series. And Khawaja was the guy they just couldn't get rid of. He faced something like 1,200 balls. He was a top scorer in the series. He was a bit different from Zach Crawley, who sort of scored about the same number of runs and about half as many balls, but he did it his own way. And he was the wicket that England came to prize as the series went on. Mitchell Starc, now he missed the first Ashes test, interestingly, but still finished up as the leading wicket taker in the series of 23. And he, probably his best performance actually came in defeat at Headingley, where he took 5 and made England's life difficult as they chased those 250 on the last day. He bowled beautifully throughout. And don't forget, the Australian seamers were under serious pressure from England's baz bowlers. They were going at 4, 5, 6 and over at times, but he held his nerve. 8 wickets at the Oval on a flat pitch. So Starc was hard to ignore. And then we come to Harmy's mate, the Ashington Express, whatever you want to call him, Mark Wood. But he was a guy who really changed the vibe of the Ashes, didn't he? England were 2-0 down going to Headingley. And he changed the mood just in that opening burst. He bowled at 96 miles an hour. He knocked out Khawaja's leg stump. We were just talking about Khawaja, the immovable Australian opener. And that wicket alone gave England hope that there was a way through this Australian lineup, and he ended up with a 5. He scored the winning runs in that test. 21 needed when he walked out to the middle. England 7 down, could have been 3-0. Hit 4 sixes in about 16 balls in that test, I think. And then had it not rained at Manchester, his cheap 3 in the second innings might have been a series winning haul. So what did he take? He took 14 wickets at 20 in that series. Didn't play much, but what he did do was he sort of had that visceral connection with the crowd, if you like. You know, he's one of those cricketers who connects with spectators as like big hitting batsmen or leg spinners. Fast bowlers who can bowl 95, 96 miles an hour make a connection. And he's not the final winner because he's just because his name begins with a W. He was a worthy one of the 5. So, yeah, those are the 5.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lawrence, though, because when you look back at the summer, it was a great summer, both, you know, England's men and women, both in Ashes series. But it wasn't like dominated by, you know, one or two individuals. I can think back to my time. It was always Warney would be the superstar and McGrath would be the superstar, Peterson during the Flintoff during the 2005 Ashes. But it wasn't a summer. So how difficult was it to come to the conclusion of these 5? I know there's a few people in both sides who couldn't be picked because obviously they'd already, you know, been chosen as a Wisden Cricketer of the Year. But how difficult was it? Because there was nobody really like the standout performers.
No, it's a fair point. I mean, you know, talking about Brook earlier, and he didn't score a Test 100. Now, usually you'd expect a batter who is a Wisden Cricket of the Year to score maybe 2 or 3. But given the criteria and who we could go with, I mean, Travis Head was in the mix. You know, he scored 163 in the World Test Championship final against India and had a couple of innings in the Ashes, but by the end sort of fell away slightly. I mean, he actually gets a different Wisden Award this year, the Wisden Trophy for the best individual test performance. That's the World Test Championship final. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. You can have years where there are 3 or 4 absolute gimmies and other years when there are 10 names that you're trying to whittle down to 5. I mean, I think I don't look at that list and go, I regret leaving out X, Y or Z. I'm sort of happy with the list. But yeah, I want debate because I want people to go on Twitter and go, you know, Booth's mad, he's forgotten about this man or woman. But yeah, it wasn't necessarily the easiest selection.
I absolutely love the repurposing of the Wisden Trophy, and I mean, I think it works tremendously well, and it must be hard work singling out a single performance. In your editor's notes, you also mentioned crucial, perhaps for Matthew Mott and maybe even Jos Buttler as coach and captain of the white ball team, that England mount a credible defence of their T20 title.
Yeah, I was in India for the World Cup, saw firsthand how poor England were. They didn't simply not play like defending champions. They played like also-rans, you know, they'd forgotten how to play white ball cricket. And that was a worry because, you know, for several years, starting in 2015 under Owen Morgan, they had a template and they stuck to it and everyone instinctively understood how it worked. Now, in India, for reasons that have never properly been explained, they went away from that and they spent the entire tournament saying, don't worry, we'll come good in the next game. And it didn't happen. So I think they have credit in the bank because England are the defending T20 champions. They won that in Australia in 2022. But if they flop in similar fashion in the Caribbean in June, then I think Buttler and Mott will have questions to answer following on so soon from the 50-over debacle.
Just for those who aren't aware, our listeners and viewers, in fact, the Wisden Trophy used to be up for grabs for the Test series between England and the West Indies. And it's now been, as I said, repurposed in a brilliant way. Lawrence, we haven't mentioned the leading cricketers in the world, which are two other separate awards. So if you could fill us in on those.
Yeah, so the leading cricketer in the world, one a man, one a woman. It's for the whole calendar year and you can be named more than once. And the leading male player is Pat Cummins, who had a year to remember. Let's be honest, Australia won the World Test Championship against India. They retained the Ashes. Then they went to India and won the 50-over World Cup. And it's easy to overlook, actually, that Cummins himself ended up with something like 42 test wickets in the year, which was more than any other seamer in world cricket. So both personally and collectively, he seemed like quite an obvious choice. The leading woman cricketer was Nat Siver-Brunt, the England all-rounder, who she had five ODI innings last year and scored hundreds in three of them. And two of those were against Australia back-to-back. And the other one was a 66-ball 100 against Sri Lanka. So, you know, it's quite hard to look beyond her. She's also sort of embodied the rise of the women's game. She was signed for £320,000 by Mumbai Indians in the inaugural Women's Premier League. And that's quite a watershed moment for women's sport. And that made her the best paid UK team female athlete. So instantly went from, you know, not being paid very much to being paid an awful lot. But her cricketing feats alone justified the award. So very pleased to give it to her.
And there's many other things obviously come out. Mike Brearley talking about Ben Stokes' captaincy. Stuart Broad, who's on the front cover, obviously a little bit about his wonderful career, A Game for All, which is a brilliant piece. And one that I think a lot of people always talk about is the spirit of cricket, which was stretched a little bit during last summer, wasn't it?
Well, it depends on your perspective, Harmy. But yes, we asked several people whether they thought the spirit of cricket was still relevant in the modern age. And we got a variety of answers. We tried to go all over the world for it, both genders. Harsha Bogle in India was very dismissive of the idea, thinks it's outdated and for romantics. Chris Cowdery, the son of Colin, who pushed for the preamble to the laws. He and Ted Dexter got it in there in 2000, tried to explain that it's not about what people think it is. It's simply a show of respect, which I sort of also take that line in the editor's notes. I think it's been weaponized, this argument about the spirit of cricket, by both sides of the debate. And it's simply a request for a show of respect. It isn't saying you can't run someone out at the non-striker's end for backing up too far. It isn't saying you should play the game like you do on the village green. It's not saying any of those things. So that piece threw up a variety of interesting answers. Heather Knight, actually, we spoke to her and she wondered whether it was wishy-washy. That was the word she used. Should we get rid of the preamble altogether? Is it just confusing people? You know, we got the laws. What's wrong with them? So, yeah, it's a contentious subject and I think it'll go on being debated for a while.
And Lawrence, finally from me, I'm going to take this opportunity to say that I garnered a comment from several comments from Sean Pollock on your behalf. And he later, being a man who eschews any kind of controversy, said, actually, I'd rather not be quoted. But he said, and he won't mind me saying this, I know that it was far too heavily weighted in favour of batters. He said, you know, the whole spirit of cricket, you find me Spirit of Cricket thing, which looks after the bowlers.
It's interesting because in the notes I mentioned this, there was an England under 19 batsman in the World Cup earlier this year in South Africa. I think it's Potchefstroom, a game against Zimbabwe. He defended the ball. It fell to the ground, stationary in front of him. He picked it up to give back to the wicketkeeper, and they appealed for obstructing the field. So that didn't seem very batter friendly to me. But look, bowlers have always taken that view, haven't they? It's all against them. Poor old Harmy with his wisdom in the background there. He's never done anything in his career, has he? But,
No, honestly, it is. It's a batter's game. It's a batter's game. You know, we want the stumps a bit bigger, but no. Boundaries are getting smaller. Bats are getting bigger. But us bowlers, we do like a win. But I do have, and I am proud of my fellow Ashingtonian, who 20 years after me is now going to get, or 19 years after me, he's going to get one of these at some point, which is for you who's watching on YouTube. This is what you get as a cricketer. You get as a Wisden 1 of 5. You get a leather-bound, lovely, lovely Wisden almanac. And it's one I really do cherish, not because of the year it was given to me, but because of what it means in the game of cricket. So I'm very, very pleased for the other four, but especially for Mark Wood, somebody I've seen grow up and seen all the hard work he's had to put in.
Good man, Harmy. It's lovely to hear.
Lawrence, thank you very much indeed for your time. I know you've got a very, very busy day of media interviews lined up, as you always do. Personally, from a journalistic perspective, I think it's the biggest job in cricket, certainly in terms of man hours. I would undoubtedly challenge anybody to say that there's a longer job in cricket. You still bearing up? It must be 10 now. You must have done your 10, 12?
Bit of grey hair. It's my 13th, actually, would you believe? But yeah, just about bearing up.
Congratulations on another brilliant, brilliant edition. Thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Manners. Cheers, Army. All the best.
That was the brilliant one and only Lawrence Booth, editor of the Wisden Almanac, editor. Harmy, we've got only a couple of minutes for all the other stories that have attracted our attention. And do you know what? I know that I always say there are lots of other podcasts that talk about the IPL. And so that's the main reason we don't talk about the IPL. But we have to mention Sunrisers Hyderabad. 2.5 weeks ago, they scored 270-odd and smashed the IPL record. And then on Monday, they made 287, Travis Head 100 off 41 balls. Do you know what was funny? When they made the 277, they've added 10 to it. A lot of people said, oh, well, we'll never see the like of that again. 2.5 weeks later, they've made 287. And people have asked me, said, do you think we'll ever see a team making 300? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? It'll probably happen every other week in the IPL. It's batsman's game, isn't it?
Batsman's game. That's it. Lawrence Booth just trying to convince us that it's a game, even game between bat and ball. Well, not when somebody's nearly got 300 in a 20-over game. Yeah, 500 is going to be the norm in 50-over games. I love the entertainment factor of it. I've got no problem whatsoever. White ball cricket should be about entertaining. Red ball cricket should be about the toughness of the game. Two, the closeness between the bat and ball needs to come, you know, needs to be brought back together in test cricket. But in white ball cricket, people want to hit sixes and fours. That's what entertainment's about. So I'm not sure I'd fancy being a bowler in that situation. But at the end of the day, it's about entertaining. 300 is going to become the norm soon. And so is 500 in a 50-over game.
Well, on Sunday, the Kolkata Knight Riders beat the Lucknow Super Giants, and Sunil Narain bowled his 4 overs, took 1 for 17, and didn't concede a boundary. I just think that in a couple of years' time, any bowler that goes for less than 40 in his 4 overs or her 4 overs will be lauded and congratulated on an excellent day. But the main question about that game is that Phil Salt made 89 not out, led the Kolkata Knight Riders to a comprehensive victory. He had a bit of luck, actually. He inside-edged a couple just past the stumps. But anyway, 89 off 45 balls. So is he now Josh Butler's partner in the planning and the thinking towards the T20 World Cup?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is Butler's partner. I think he's proved that he's the real deal at the top level, the highest level of domestic cricket. I think he's done it in international cricket as well, out in the Caribbean. I think it's going to be a big summer for Phil Salt, because I've got a funny feeling he might keep wicket for England as well in the test matches. I think England fancy him. I think he throws his hat in the ring. If he goes and has a good World T20, I think England might look at him and go further down the line on good pitches, especially against India at home and in Australia away. You know, the Ollie Robinson, Jamie Smith, you know, Ben Foulkes, Johnny Bairstow. I think you can add one more to that list, and I think that name will be Phil Salt. And I think if he has a good World T20, it would surprise me if he's a left field pick from Stokes, McCollum, and Key, because I know they do fancy him. So, you know, the more runs he gets in the IPL, I think it doesn't just enhance his cause to open the bat with Josh Butler. I think if that's the case, England might feel he might be a left field pick for number 7 for England.
Okay, and finally, before the final word, that is, MS Dhoni, 42 years old, doesn't play a single game of organised cricket between IPLs. Not one. Not a proper game of cricket. Just has a few nets. And he walks out in the biggest game of the IPL against the Mumbai Indians, Chennai Super Kings, Mumbai Indians. There's four balls left. Hardik Pandya, the Mumbai Indians captain's bowling, and he hits the first three of them for 6 and takes 2 off the last. He's 20 not out off 4 balls, which just happens to be the winning margin for the Chennai Super Kings. And the Mumbai Indians crowd at the Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai booing Hardik Pandya, as they have been for a couple of weeks now. I mean, just extraordinary story, MS Dhoni.
It's frightening, isn't it? Frightening how much passion he's got for the game to want to come out and showcase and be the big man on the big stage. And Hardik Pandya, just feel for him. Can you imagine Hardik Pandya going, the last thing I need to see now, walking out to bat, having been booed by my home supporters for the last few weeks because my team have been terrible, is MS Dhoni with a license. Whap, 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 666. The boos get even louder. So, yeah, if it doesn't rain, I know we've had Ashley Giles on this show, and it doesn't rain, it pours, you know, for Hardik Pandya. Yeah, I think the last person he would have liked to have seen was his former captain, MS Dhoni, walking out. Who cares about, you know, organised games of cricket? Who cares about nets? You see the ball, you hit the ball. MS Dhoni certainly did that. Wow.
I quite like the idea of picking our own final words. So I don't know whether you've got one or not, but mine goes to real international cricket, and I use that in inverted commas, but I mean, all international cricket is real, but what really, really matters is international cricket for people who rarely, rarely get to play it and get one chance maybe to feature on the big stage. So I want to draw attention to the Women's T20 World Cup qualifying tournament, which gets underway in a couple of weeks' time in Abu Dhabi. Scotland, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Uganda, and the United States, and Ireland, Netherlands, the UAE, Vanuatu, and Zimbabwe vying for 2 places in the Women's T20 World Cup, joining the big guns, Australia, England, India, New Zealand, Pakistan, South Africa, West Indies. And it's just, it's going to be full of amateurs. I mean, you know, like, how hard is it to organise cricket in Vanuatu and these places, Uganda? It's incredible, the work and the effort from people who will never, ever be acknowledged for the work that they do. And my final word goes to Gabby Lewis from Ireland, who is 23, Harmy, and in her 10th year of international cricket. just incredible. She made her debut at 14. She's got almost 2,000 runs at 27.5 with 111 centuries. And, you know, I'm going to be watching that tournament, because there's not hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars involved. And I know that for every one of those women involved, it's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime shot to feature on the biggest stage. It's what I say. It's cricket that matters.
It is cricket that matters. And it shows that there's more than just 10 teams. There's more than just 10 nations. You know, you see the men's World T20s now. Going, you know, we've seen, you know, plenty of great stories, and we've touched on them throughout the show, and we've brought them with, you know, coaches of the likes of Nepal and places, people like that have gone to that. And you look at, you know, the women's game now is thriving. 100, you know, the way the 100's gone, and, you know, we've had Lawrence Booth talking about Nats Kibber-Brunt. To give somebody a chance to play on the big stage and the world stage, especially amateur, it just shows you that the cricket around the world is a game for everybody, and a game that we all love. So like in football, when people talk about football, they only think the Premier League, that's it. Football is the Premier League and the Champions League. That's the only football that exists. It's not. You know, so sport, cricket's been hammered over the course of this last 3 or 4 weeks. You know, my local clubs had postponements. There'll be clubs, countless clubs, for the first 3 weeks of the season won't be able to get games of cricket, which is heartbreaking because they've waited so long for it. And I'm with you, Manners. You know, this women's tournament will give somebody a chance to play on the big stage where they never thought they were going to play. And that, for me, is bigger than the IPL. It's bigger than the World T20. It's bigger than the Ashes because it's, you know, it's real cricket.
You've been listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, alongside former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you have missed any of the show and you want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed, available as always from the free TalkSport app. We'll be back at the same time next week for another busy show. But for now, this has been another edition of Following On.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.